Hey you, how's it going? My name is Ruby Price and you are listening to the fourth ever episode of Fresh From The Scene. Before the podcast really gets started, I'm just going to give a quick little plug to my Spotify playlist, which will have recently updated, Songs For A Ruby Tuesday. On the last Tuesday of every month, I compile a list of 15 songs that I've been listening to over the last month and put them all together into one handy playlist. And as you can probably expect, there was a couple of songs from people who have appeared on this podcast. But yeah, there will be a link in the description to the playlist on Spotify, so make sure you go and check that out. Whilst I've got you here, I would just like to say, if you can share this podcast on social media, let people know what you think of this podcast, send it to someone who you think might enjoy it, stuff like that, you know. Send it to your dog if they've got an Instagram account. People do that now. And the dog usually gets more followers than the person who's posted it in the first place. But yeah, please just, you know, get the word out. Get people listening to Fresh From The Scene if you are enjoying it. And you could maybe leave a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to it on. We're on quite a lot of them. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcasts. You know, there's the TuneIn app, stuff like that. You can find us on Twitter at FFTScene. That's FFTScene. Alternatively, you can find me on Twitter at Rubes. Yeah. But yeah, this week's guest is Toby Burton, and I hope you enjoy it. And now I guess I'll just let the podcast get on. Yeah.
You're listening to Fresh From The Scene with your host, Ruby Price.
Welcome to Fresh From The Scene. Today's guest is the fantastic Toby Burton.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm warm, but I'm...
It's very warm in this room.
But it's nice. It's a contrast to the horrible weather outside, so...
Yeah, Huddersfield, just it's grey and gloomy.
Yeah, it always is, but it's nice.
Yeah. So, you know, for anyone who is unfamiliar with who you are, why don't you give a quick summary of Toby Burton music?
Yeah, so I'm pretty much just a singer-songwriter. That's how I would sum it up. It's just something that I've done for a while now, and last year released an EP at the end of my uni course, which actually went really well. So it's just, you know, that's something that I've taken on and just trying to keep it going and seeing what happens with it, really. But I would say I'm just a singer-songwriter, and that's what I do.
Just a singer-songwriter.
That's what I'm going with.
I had a listen to your EP, and I do like it.
Oh, thank you.
There's a lot of emotion and, like, soul behind it, I reckon.
Yeah, it was... I mean, the songs that I were writing for that EP were pretty sort of, like, emotional and sort of like mental health focused. Not intentionally. I didn't sort of like set out with it being like, this is the type of project that it's going to be, but that's just, you know, in sort of the headspace that I was in at the time, that was what sort of came out with it. And I was really pleased with it, obviously because it was part of the degree as well, as well as sort of putting it out and releasing it. It was nice to have that sort of like raw feel to it, which I think a lot of people sort of picked up on, which is nice.
Yeah, the view figures as well do sort of seem to reflect that people picked up on
it. Yeah, I still can't wrap my head around that, because I brought it out sort of expecting, like, you know, like a few people to listen to it, like my mum might listen to it and like some of my friends and whatever, but obviously for me it was sort of half degree project and half like, okay, I could do something with this, but I didn't expect the amount of people that I've listened to it to listen to it, which is just, yeah, it's just incredible.
So this is obviously coming out after you make the announcement later tonight.
Yes.
But, you know, what's going on there?
So, yeah, so I've basically been working on, over the summer I recorded like a bunch of new music. I actually recorded it here in Huddersfield, which was nice. But the announcement that I, you know, was going to be talking about is I have the new single, which is a song called Lost and Found, which is coming out on December 6th, which is really exciting because I've sort of been keeping that locked down since summer and not really saying anything about it and sort of waiting for the time to get it right and release it. And yeah, so that's what's going on, and should be, hopefully really exciting, because the obviously the amount of people that have listened to the EP from last year, thankfully, because you know some of those people have like followed my Spotify and all of this sort of stuff. The next time I bring something out, hopefully should get sent directly to those people straight away, which gives me a little bit of a lift off, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, you know, you've already got that audience there, yeah, and you know, potential for them to share it onto bigger audiences.
Yeah, it's like it's almost like a snowball effect, which is just baffling to me, because I have no idea what it's going to be like when it comes out. I'm not sure whether people are going to take it on or whether it's, you know, it's going to be one of those things that dies. But I think the fact that there's people already listening is a good start. So I'm really hoping that people enjoy it.
I've heard from some friends that you know, we mutual friends.
Yes.
It's going in a bit of a different direction.
Yeah, a little bit. So my EP that I brought out last year is very sort of singer-songwriter, acoustic, which is, you know, it's something that I really enjoy. I think that's sort of my style, doing that sort of music. But some of the stuff that I was doing for that EP was a little bit more produced. So there was bits of like electric guitar and more backing vocals and all this sort of stuff that was going on, some like drums and bass and more sort of like band type arrangements. But obviously there was a lot of stuff on there that was quite stripped back as well. But the stuff that I was recording over summer is definitely going more, it's getting more produced, it's getting, you know, there's more to it than just singer-songwriter acoustic stuff, which is exciting.
A lot more layers.
Yeah, it's got more to it, and it's something that I'm looking forward to bringing out, because I think people are going to really enjoy it.
So going back to what you were just saying beforehand about, you know, there's the audience already there.
Yes.
Like obviously in this sort of era of music, sort of not really production but releasing.
Yeah.
You've obviously got that more instantaneous feedback and stuff. You know, thanks to streaming, people can listen to things immediately. They don't have to, you know, queue up outside HMV and buy a single. What would you like? How do you sort of view this phase of the industry?
A lot of people complain about it and sort of, you know, say, oh well, people aren't getting paid for it. People aren't getting paid for streams. And I think it's, whilst that's possibly true, like you're going to get less money for streaming than you are if somebody buys like a physical product from you, I think it's a lot more personal with streaming, because obviously with the way that Spotify works, people get their own sort of like personal mixes made for them. And you know, with the way streaming happens, it's, you can sort of push your music to people directly, and I think that's sort of like a really exciting way of doing things. And I think if you market it in the right way, if you look at people like Lewis Capaldi and the way that they're doing all of their marketing, yes, it's streaming and it's not necessarily a physical product, but you're getting the sort of like interaction, the humor, the sort of like the personality with it. And I think that's something that's, you know, that's taken off. People seem to be really appreciating personality and songwriting, even though, you know, it's online as opposed to like queuing up outside a shop or something like that. I think people are really sort of taking to the personal side of it, which is good for the sort of stuff that I write. I think a lot of people can, you know, there's playlists on Spotify for songs to cry yourself to sleep to and all of these sorts of things. And that, I think, is, you know, it's a little bit sad, but it's a personal thing for people, and people can look at that and relate to it. And I think that's really exciting.
Staying on the industry.
Yes.
Like a lot of artists these days are sort of tending to stay with the distribution.
Yes.
You know, like using services like DistroKid or Ditto, etc. You know, would you, like, obviously at the level you're at now, like, would your ambition be to then, you know, get signed to a label, or would it be to, you know?
I'm not entirely sure, because obviously with it being a label, obviously you get the sort of push that they have. So if you get signed to something like Warner or Interscope or something, you know, something huge like that, you're going to instantly get that push and that marketing from them, which in theory would make you like into a big artist or whatever. But there's so many horror stories where I saw an artist called Bruno Major. He put a post on a couple of days ago saying like he got signed to a label, and he recorded an album, and they gave him all this funding for the album, and then they took one listen to the album when he'd finished recording it and whatever, and dropped him on the spot, and just said, look, we're not enjoying that. So I think if I was to get signed to any label, I'd have to be very careful about what label to go with. There's some sort of like more independent, smaller labels, as things like Cooking Vinyl or Cobalt and things like that, that I think are a better way of approaching it. I think they're a lot more sort of like personal to the artist. I'm not sure if I'd enjoy being signed onto a big label. But if somebody came knocking with a really good deal or something like that, I'd obviously take it into consideration. I wouldn't just like instantly deny it. there's a huge opportunity, but I think with the way that so many you can record, release a full album from your bedroom, and that can get millions and millions of streams. So I don't think it's as needed as it was maybe sort of like 10, 15 years ago. And I think that's a really good thing, because I think it gives people more power to sort of do what they want.
Yeah. And then as well, like, you don't end up with situations like completely different genre, but like what Taylor Swift is currently going through with Scooter Braun and all of that. You know, if you make all the stuff yourself and distribute it yourself, you then own it. And, the artist you said, Bruno Major,
yes.
Do you know, did he actually get to then release the songs himself? Or
yeah, so he, the song that I think he was talking about, he's just released a song called Tapestry, which I think is the song that he was talking about. And it was he basically said, look, we recorded this song as part of the album, and then, because obviously it wasn't released, it wasn't, all of this stuff happened. I assume because of that, and they just dropped him, that they didn't own any of it because they didn't release anything.
Hmm.
They just sort of did it under the table and sort of said, look, we don't want it. So he sort of said, he lost heart for a few years, but then he decided he wanted to redo that song and sort of like re-record it with the people that he wrote it with. And that's why he decided to bring it out. So I think in that situation, because it was sort of like an unspoken thing, people they just dropped him. I think he got away with it a little bit there. But there's a lot of things, with contracts where it's sort of like, you sign over your life to them and, all of your masters and all of this sort of stuff. And obviously this is what's happened with Taylor Swift. And they've sort of gone to the extent of saying, you can't actually perform new versions of your old songs because they're ours. And I think that's really tough.
Yeah. They can't even treat it as a cover, really, because it's still sort of, there's still an IP there, isn't there?
Yeah. So as long as it has the sort of like the lyrical content and everything that it originally had, it's the original song, which kind of sucks for Taylor Swift. I feel really bad for her, to be fair.
Yeah, I keep seeing stuff from it. Yeah. It just, like, in a completely different context, it just reminds me of what everyone was talking about with Kesha a couple of years ago as well.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, being contractually obliged to, engage with someone who's problematic in terms of, the context of the two artists, essentially. Did I remember correctly that you were on the Coffee House session tour thing?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't on the actual tour itself. I was looking into doing the actual tour, but the sort of like the cost of what it would have, sort of been for me to do it was a little bit high. I did have a chat with the people from the team, and they were really lovely, but it just wasn't realistic for me to do that.
Yeah.
But I have played. I have played on a couple of them here in Huddersfield with some of the different artists, which is always great because they're always really, really good.
Yeah, I remember in my first year at this uni, there were a couple of them. I'm 99% sure that Tom Walker was one of them.
Yes, I think he was. Yeah. Who else? I'm trying to think who else has done them. There's a guy called Benedict Cork, I know, who did one who was really, really good. And Izzy Bizu. I think Seafret might have done one as well.
Quite possibly.
And they're quite, they're doing...
They all seem to be doing really well now. Yeah. It's like, why did I not pay attention to you when you're in, the cafeteria or whatever?
Yeah, it's they're certainly doing... Everyone who's done it seems to be doing sort of, really, really good. There was a band called The Wandering Hearts that did one.
Yeah, I remember that. Ago,
and they've just been touring with Jack Savaretti, like all over the UK, which is crazy. So maybe it's something that I need to look into a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely.
And just sort of pushing that, because everyone seems to be doing like a really good job with it.
Mm. I mean, you've already got that in, obviously, having played before.
Yeah.
You know, what was that like? Did people actually pay attention, or was it just, you know, I'm going to stand here and play some songs?
Yeah, it was sort of half and half. So obviously with gigging, I mean, stuff that I've done, you've sort of got the direct split between, you know, if you play in a bar, people are not going to pay attention to you, just sort of like backing music. If you play in a venue, people are there to listen. And the coffee house stuff was sort of like directly in between that, because obviously it was just sort of like in the canteen, and half the people were like, you know, you could see people like eating the sandwich and like look up and be like, this is all right, I can listen to this. And then there were some people who were just, you know, having their lunch break with their friends and chatting, and that's, you know, that's understandable because it's lunchtime.
Yeah, exactly.
But then obviously there were some people who were like really intent on listening as well, which I think it's an interesting atmosphere to play in. Because it's sort of like, can I win the people over that I sat there eating the lunch?
Yeah.
Obviously,
can I get that one person to take his headphones out?
Yeah. Like if you see somebody, like, it's like when, like, if you go busking and like you're playing on the street and there's people walking down the street with their headphones in, and like they might walk past and just stop for like 5 seconds, take the headphones out, and just have a little listen. I think that's really interesting, because it's sort of like, you know, you've had that sort of like impact there.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
You know, if you can stop someone, you know, streaming what they're listening
to.
Yeah. You know.
People would rather, you know, people would take, you know, 5-10 seconds out of their day to listen to what you're doing on the street. Or, you know, it's the same, you know, same with streaming. Like, you know, there's so much music being uploaded, and that's why it was so nice to see that people were listening to the stuff that I was doing, because there's so much on there. And to even, you know, get to the, you know, to the point where I was at with it, I think is, you know, ridiculous. So it's nice to know that there's people, you know, wanting to listen.
Wanting to hear more.
Yeah, which is cool.
On the topic of gigging,
What's
probably the best gig memory that you can think of right now on the spot?
Oh, I did, I must admit, I did Underneath the Stars Festival this morning. Yeah, so I did Underneath the Stars Festival this August, which is like a sort of like a folk festival in Barnsley. That was really cool, because there was, you sort of see the lineup poster when it comes out, and there's like the Proclaimers and like Billy Bragg, and then, you know, I was on the same poster as those guys, which is crazy. And there must have been, you know, sort of pushing 1,000 people in the tent, with, you know, plenty of people outside, and it's just things like that just sort of stun me, because you walk out thinking, okay, there might be a few people there, but they're at the festival, they bought a ticket, you know, they don't have to sit there and listen.
Yeah.
And there was people, you know, there was people that were just sat there for the entire set. And, you know, I was doing my best, because, you know, it's something that I've had to learn, is sort of like, it's not just doing the songs, you've got to sort of like do the bits in between and interact with people. And, you know, I was doing my best attempt at that, and people were taking to it really well and responding really well, which was great, because things like that can go really badly wrong. You know, you try and get somebody to like sing along and they don't, but they were really, really responsive, and I love that festival. So I think that's probably my top one. Either that or my EP launch that I did at the Paris last year, which was intense.
How was that?
That was intense. That was good, yeah. It was possibly the warmest I've ever been in my life.
Oh, really?
Because it was like in June.
Oh, yeah.
In what is essentially just a made up barn. Filled with people, which is...
Parish has two settings, unbelievably cold or unbearably warm.
I generally just go with, if it's cold outside, it's going to be even colder inside in the parish. If it's hot outside, you're going to die. So it's I love that venue. It's probably my favourite venue that I've played at. And I'm actually going to be playing there. It's not fully announced yet. But I can say it.
You can say
and
it.
I'm actually going to be playing there in February. I'm planning a little something in February. So
awesome! We'll have to keep an eye out for that.
It's going to be really, really fun. Can't really say too much more about it, but it's happening. There's something going on. So
keep them peeled.
Yeah,
yeah. I remember I was once. It was the Beast from the East.
Yes,
you know, and there was a Hang the DJ gig on in Paris.
Oh yeah.
And it was like, it was so cold that basically no one really came.
Yeah.
But the people that did come
really enjoyed
it. But then last summer, well, this summer actually, I was there seeing Mahatma Raindrop,
okay,
and
yeah,
it was the hottest day of the year, and that venue was packed out.
Yeah,
and it was just, oh, man,
that's intense.
I think I lost more body weight and sweat than I've ever lost in just, you know, dieting in my entire life.
Maybe that's the new diet. People just need to go and see gigs on like warm days, like exclusively in the summer months. Just go and watch gigs and like see what happens.
And then during the winter months, you go to the other hemisphere.
Yeah,
and then it's the summer month.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Your bank account may not enjoy it as much, but I'm sure that would be a wonderful, wonderful way of losing weight.
Money and weight.
Yeah, both things. You'll lose weight just from the amount of money you're losing from your wallet.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, if you're going on weighing scales with your wallet and it's full, you know, you're going to get unrealistic.
It's a false illusion.
Yeah, exactly. So conversely, weirdest gig experience.
Weirdest gig. Oh, definitely. I have a weirdest gig experience. It was a really, really good show. But I went and played, I did a festival in Barnsley, and it was sort of like a young performers competition a couple of years ago, which I was really fortunate enough to win. And then after I'd played, one of the judges sort of came up to me and says, oh, we sort of run this festival in Cornwall, if you'd be interested in playing. And I sort of thought, well, it's going to be like a little village thing, because the festival in Barnsley was fairly small. And then sort of looked it up, and it was this like huge festival they do on the beach. They had Lulu performing and all of this like really cool stuff. And I went down there for the weekend. I'd never been to Cornwall before. And I got there and there was just loads of people dressed as pirates.
Okay.
Which was strange. But then I realized that the actual theme that they'd set for the festival was pirates. So people were going in like fancy dress, and I performed on like the Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
And there was a guy dressed as a pirate on the front row, and then next to him, there was a guy, he must have been like 6'5", dressed as a parrot. like in a life-size parrot costume. And it just looked ridiculous. And obviously you're trying to perform, and there's these guys sat in the front row. And then I played, and I sort of finished. I was packing my gear away, and the guy on the front row sort of like shouts me. He's like, Can you sign my inflatable parrot? Like he'd brought this like inflatable thing that he had on his shoulder. He'd like glued it on or something. And he was going round, and he was getting the signatures of all the artists that had played at the festival, which I thought was really cool. But it's possibly the weirdest thing I've ever seen on the front row of a gig in my life.
Did it even take place near, you know, Talk Like a Pirate Day?
I don't know.
19th of September.
I mean, it's Cornwall, so I'm not entirely sure what.
I don't think they'd need the justification, to be honest.
The accent sort of tends itself towards pirate anyway, which is always lovely.
Lots of ours.
Yeah, it's nice. It's really friendly. But it was just weird. It was wonderful, but it was really strange.
That, you know, pirates music. You know, pirate metal is a thing.
It is. It's definitely a thing.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah.
Did they have any of that at the festival?
They might have done, actually. Thinking about it, there was definitely. I mean, there was some sort of like folky sea shanty type stuff going on, which I guess is kind of piratey. And there was some metal bands. So I guess if you combine the two things together, it was sort of like a pirate metal type theme, which was great. It was on the beach. Like the main stage of the festival was just literally on the beach next to the sea.
Yeah.
So they had to be really careful with the tides and stuff and not get caught out with it.
Yeah, just like, you have to finish at this point, and I don't care if you're running over, you have to finish.
Yeah, not because we don't want to listen to you, but because you will literally get drowned.
Yeah.
But it was a really cool festival. I enjoyed it.
Better than being thrown in the deep end.
Yeah. Unintentionally, could have been.
Exactly.
But survived the weekend, which was really cool.
Survived the weekend.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, like playing with a couple of bigger artists.
Yes.
Well, I say a couple of bigger artists, you know, the Proclaimers and Billy Bragg.
Yeah.
You know, who would your ideal, like, if you were supporting someone, who would the most ideal person for you to support be?
I think the one that I would sort of like really enjoy the most is a guy called Lewis Watson.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that I have listened to for a long time, and somebody who was like a big inspiration on the music that I write. And I know that he's got another album coming out soon.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to try and push for that, because that would be like my ideal support slot. Even if it was just like one gig, like if he'd played like Leeds or Manchester or something, I was like, can I come and play?
Yeah, even if it's just like the first support, you know, yeah, just to play on the same stage as him.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, I'm fine with. I mean, with being an acoustic artist, most of the time you get
the first slot,
an opener. Yeah, unless it's your sort of gig, which was nice with my EP launch, because I could sort of say I'm gonna be on last for this one, and then have some like really talented people supporting. But I'm fine, you know, if it was somebody like that, somebody who's had that impact on me and my music, I'd be fine being an opener for that. Because I'd just, I'd be able to perform, and then I'd just be able to sit there and be like, this is the best. So
you just sort of sat, well, not sat, but like stood just sort of like near the back, just sort of chilling, watching and being like, I was just on that stage and now this person is on that stage.
Well, that's the cool thing, because I've played with a couple of artists that I really enjoyed. I supported a band called Meadowlark on their tour, and I've played like the coffee house sessions and the live things with bands like Seafret and people that I really enjoy. And it's just weird. You sort of look at the people that are playing and you're like, I've just done that. Or I played a couple of gigs at the Academy in Sheffield.
Oh yeah.
And you sort of just, you look at the poster of like, this is what's upcoming in the venue, and you're like, I was just on the same stage as these people. And you never get used to it. I don't want to ever get used to it, because I think if you got used to it,
it just sort of normalize it and it loses its spark.
I just think I just don't want to ever get used to stuff like that, because I just want to keep seeing what happens. And it's almost like that wonder you have like Christmas when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And you're like, are you really excited about everything? Like, I just want to keep that going with the stuff that I'm doing, and just be like, what's coming next? Like, is it going to be really exciting? Like, I'm buzzing about the new song that I've got coming out, because it's the same thing that I've done multiple times. Like, I've brought things out before, but I'm still excited about it. And I'm pleased that I'm still excited about it, because I think you don't want to lose that.
No, definitely.
You get bored.
Yeah. Like, my favourite band are McFly.
Nice.
And the reason why they didn't release like anything that they'd done after they came back a couple of years ago to then disappear again was because, they'd got bored of the music that they'd recorded.
Yeah.
It's come out now in the form of demos.
Mm.
But, at the time, just hearing that, my favourite band had got bored of their own songs.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to release them.
Yeah. I think it's difficult because there's so much, with McFly and being such a, like a huge band, it's difficult. I imagine it's really difficult for them not to get burnt out.
Mm.
And it's the same thing I feel with like, any artist that's doing like really, really well for themselves. Like, I know Sam Fender, who's like smashing it at the minute and just come out of nowhere. He's like, he was saying about the burnout and being like, you're on tour all the time. You just don't have a chance to sort of like come down and rest, and people just get tired of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that the industry as a whole needs to sort of look at. It's like, okay, we appreciate that. You want to go out and do all of these shows, and we want to push you to do all of these things. But people need to have that sort of that rest and a chance to look after themselves. I think there's a lot of people not looking after themselves in the industry, and I think that's really sad.
Yeah, you seem to see like it's either a really long tour with lots of dates, and then followed by a very short break, and then another long tour, or a short tour with like 3 or 4 dates, a sort of medium break, and then another medium tour. We all complain when they announce the tour dates. It's like, why aren't you playing here?
Yeah,
it's like, maybe because they need to take some time out.
It's one of those things, isn't it? Because I think some people are naturally sort of more resistant to it, but it must be incredibly like taxing, especially because you'll be away from your you'll be away from your family, you'll be away from your friends, and it's great that you'll be performing every night, and there'll be that huge like adulation from the crowd and whatever. But then you go back to the hotel room on that night, and you just you've not got your friends and family there,
and you've just had a very emotionally tolling gig potentially.
It must and like all the flying and the traveling and all of this stuff, it must just be really, really tiring. And like, I know Mumford and Sons sort of said something about it, because they were like, they've started touring now because they've all started having kids and like families and things like that. They've started like bringing their families on tour with them, or like basing their tours around sort of like family events, which I think is really interesting because they're sort of thinking about like, there's more than just this. How can we sort of get around it and make it best for us? Which I think is really good because people are still going to go and buy tickets and people are still going to go and watch them.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's best for both types of people because if they're well rested and they're in a, you know, sort of like good headspace,
they should be performing better as well. And yeah,
it's gonna be beneficial to everybody if the artists are looking after themselves. And I think sometimes people need to think about that.
Yeah, I mean, we were discussing before the show, like, I'm wearing an As It Is t-shirt.
Yeah.
Ben, the rhythm guitarist from As It Is, has just basically left As It Is because of you know, the extensive touring life that them as a band have had to do to support them as a band financially.
Yeah,
you know,
it's an expensive business to be in, because I know a lot of people, the only way that they will even think about sort of breaking even is by, you know, if people go out and buy their merchandise. Like, it's not even necessarily like a CD thing, because I think a lot of people are fine with, you know, with streaming, and streaming does pay to a point.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, if people really want their sort of like favorite bands to keep doing the things that they're really enjoying, is support it, you know, even if it's just like downloading a couple of tracks. Like, that's still, you know, that's still going to be a few pounds that they can then use to sort of fund, you know, like a train ticket across Germany or something. I don't know. But I think a lot of artists need to talk about it more. And I think that will help a lot of people then understand and be able to sort of encourage healthy touring as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and also then if you do buy their music, you don't end up with some rather questionable, you know, most selling artists of the year.
It's, yeah, because I saw something. It was the 21 Pilots thing, wasn't it? They recently got announced as like the top selling rock act of the decade, which, I mean, that's not their fault. Like, I enjoy 21 Pilots. I think they're doing really, really well, and they put on a really good show.
They do. I saw them at Leeds this year, and they were, like, I wasn't expecting it to be, but it was the standout set of my weekend.
Yeah, they've got a lot of energy. It's just the sort of like the classification of things, and also the fact that in the charts there'll be like a number one track that stays at number one for like 2 months because people just, you know, they will just stream it repeatedly. And I think a lot of the, you know, a lot of the algorithms and things like that, they sort of, you know, when you go on your Spotify, you look at the songs that you've saved recently, you just rinse them.
Yeah.
And you're like, on repeat.
They've now started giving you a playlist of things that you listen to on repeat.
Yeah. And that sort of thing, I think, is a little bit questionable when it comes to like charting and things like that. Because if people are just constantly listening to the same things, nothing's going to move. So like, you'll listen to the radio for like 2 months and like, it'll just be the same.
Yeah, I mean, The Greatest Showman is still, like, as an album, like, in the top four, I think, of album charts.
Yeah, you know? It's pretty...
Who's even listening to that anymore?
I mean, I think it's a great soundtrack, but
I do like, you know, some of the songs on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
The film, I love a lot less than when I actually saw it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I went in with very low expectations about that film.
Same.
And I watched it late. It was probably about 6 months after it came out. And I went in and I was like, this is actually really good. I'm sat there like crying with like snacks. Like this is good.
It is a very magical experience.
Yeah.
I just sort of like, you know, I think what happened was I was more exposed to like the negative sides of the film, through social commentary. And then it just sort of inflicted my opinion on it. A lot like Star Wars. You know?
Yeah, it's another one, isn't it? It's that sort of like social media echo chamber that will keep albums in that like sort of like number one spot for so long.
Yeah.
Because the more people talk about it, the more people see it, and then the more people will talk about it. And it's just constantly in that cycle until something else comes along and has such an impact that it sort of goes, right, well, I'm going to ignore everything else that's going on. I'm just going to come straight and take the number one spot.
Usually it requires an artist to, you know, die.
Yeah. Something as tragic as that, or something just like a label will just push thousands or millions of pounds into just advertising an artist. You know, there'll be billboards everywhere, there'll be Spotify adverts, there'll be like social media things, and you're just like inundated with there's this going on.
Yeah.
I think that's what it can take sometimes for somebody to, like, break it like that.
I did particularly enjoy the While She Sleeps previous, like, advertising campaign where they had that person who was like, you know, this many streams is how many we need in order to, you know. Like.
I thought it was really interesting because it sort of illustrates, you know, it's the honesty. I think people, I think that's something that people are really sort of taking to at the minute is honest marketing.
Honest marketing.
Because I saw a band from, I can't remember their name, but they posted something on Twitter saying, we're going to be honest with you, we've got a show in Southampton next week. He said it's like a 100 cap show. There's still 82 tickets remaining.
Oh, wow.
It's like, we may have to pull the show at this rate because there's still
It wouldn't be a profit.
But they were like, can we just, you know, would it be too much to ask if like 82 people could like retweet it on Twitter? And because of that, and people were really sort of like, this is really refreshing. Like they're, you know, they're saying that they're struggling with it. And they sold it out.
Yeah.
Because people saw that and they were like, well, we don't want that to happen. Like, there are good people out there. Like,
definitely.
I know it seems, you know, it seems like everything's really not great, but there are some genuinely nice people out there that will support a band like that, even if they've never heard of them before. Because they'll just see something honest and refreshing like that and be like, yeah, I'll retweet that. I'll like it. I'll, you know, I'll share it to my friends and hopefully, you know, somebody will turn up and buy a ticket.
Because you do get a lot of, you know, like bands will tweet an event and be like, oh, tickets are selling fast.
Yes.
And then like 3 months later, they're like, tickets are selling fast. And it's like, you know, oh, there's only 50 tickets left. And it's like, how many tickets have you actually got for this event?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like the whole like, oh, there's only a few tickets left. Like usually that means there's still quite a few tickets left.
I mean, I wanted to put on an event and I was like, okay, I need to sell tickets to this.
Yeah.
How do I do that? Oh, you know, there's only a limited time left that you can buy tickets. And
literally.
You know, give it some immediacy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you sort of separate the people who are like, nah, I'm not going to go, to the people who are like, I was thinking about it. You know?
Yeah, it's the same with, and it's something that I've sort of like taken on while I've been sort of like trying to promote this new stuff that I've been doing, is I was looking at what other artists that are similar to me were doing with their promotion and whatever. And it seems to be that people will literally only announce things like a week, 2 weeks before. And it gives it that sense of like, I know, I need to pre-save it now. I need to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, because if you did it like, because the stuff I've done before, I've done it like, I've announced it like 6 weeks before the release date. And then by the time it comes out, people are like, oh, yeah, that's
Oh, yeah,
thing
you
that
said
happening.
That was happening, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Whereas if I left it like, you know, for 2 weeks, like 2 weeks before, it's sort of like, yeah, this is coming out in a couple of weeks. Everyone's like, oh, right, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And it's fresh in people's minds then. And I think that's a lot of what a lot of people are doing now. Because obviously social media is so...
We're in the, like, on-demand era. You know, if you want to watch a video, you know, if you go on YouTube and it's not there, you know, you find something else to watch.
Yeah.
You know, you need to sort of... It feels weird saying it, but you need to capitalize on people's interest whilst you still have it.
Yes,
you know?
Definitely. And I think, I mean, to be fair, using Bruno Major is another example for it. His first album that he did... Which I think is a great strategy because obviously for streaming, the more consistently you can like upload things, it's the same for any social media. The more consistent you can be, like if you do like a post every couple of days or a post every week, it will just generally be more favorable to the algorithms and people who are watching. And because if they know, you know, you can click on somebody's YouTube channel and at 7 PM on a Tuesday there's going to be a video there. You know, people are encouraged by that. But he did a song every month. For 12 months, like a whole year. Write, record, master, mix, do all of this sort of stuff, and bring it out. And then at the end of the 12 months, he released...
An album.
The 12 tracks as an album. But because he'd been releasing a track every month, as opposed to like just chucking out like the 12 tracks at the end of the year, he had 12 opportunities to get featured on playlists. He had 12 opportunities for people to see it on social media and all this sort of stuff. And it blew up because people... You know, we're getting drip-fed this content. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing now, is that sort of, like, constant stream of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's useful for some things and really irritating for other things.
So to bring it all back full circle, when you release this single, which will be next week at the time of recording.
Yes.
And I think you've told me it's going on an EP. If you haven't, you're now about to tell people.
Yeah, potentially. I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen with it yet. I do have a lot of new music that's sort of like ready or nearly ready. But I know for a fact that there is definitely going to be this single coming out. And then possibly in a couple of months, there might be another one, which I have ready already. So that's the sort of like the start of the plan. And hopefully going to be doing like a little bit of a tour in February, which may include the Paris show in Huddersfield. but generally just trying to sort of be a bit more consistent with it, because I released my EP last year, and I sort of did that as a single and then a 5-track EP. And I think if I could go back and do it again, I would probably release the songs individually, one by one.
5 songs, and then, look, they're available in an EP as well.
Yeah, or at the very least sort of do like 3 and then be like, okay, well, you can buy these 3 songs, and if you do get these 3 songs, you will also get like this extra song or this, a couple of extra songs. And I think that's possibly a good way of sort of incentivizing it.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like, well, this the stuff you've heard before, but there's also some new stuff if you want to, if you want to do that. You might not, you might want to just listen to the 3 songs that you really like, but it gives people that option of having new things, which I think's probably the way forward. I don't know whether I'm going to do that or not, but I do know that there's definitely this song and another song, which is going to be
definitely
there at some point. Yeah.
So whilst I've still got you sat here, is there anything else you would like to plug?
If people could, if people could go and follow me on my social media and my Spotify, I think that would be really beneficial, because obviously if you follow me on my Spotify when the song comes out, if you're lazy like me, it gets delivered straight to you. You don't have to go and find it, which is really good. And it also helps me out with like chances of getting on playlists and stuff. If people can sort of like pre-save the song and also like follow me on there, it's just really useful, because you get that sort of like first day impact of things. So my Spotify is just Toby Burton, and then any of my social media, if you just type that in, or just type Toby Burton Music, it's all on there. I've also got a website, which is actually kind of useful, because it's got all of my social media links and links to all of like new music and things like that. So that's probably where I would send people.
Yeah, just Toby Burton bracket maybe music.
Yeah, it's if Toby Burton doesn't come up, just type in Toby Burton Music and it will. So.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
No worries. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.
And I hope the single launch goes well.
We'll find out.
We'll find out
in about a week.
Make sure that you tweet him how it went.
Yeah, I will. I will let you know how it goes. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Fresh from the Scene with Ruby Price.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did, maybe go and share it on social media. Remember, you can find us online at FFTScene. Don't forget to subscribe or follow or whatever the kids are calling it these days, because, hello fellow youths. Yeah, that'd be cool. Anyway, I've been Ruby Price, and I shall see you in the next podcast. Thank you, and goodbye.